You know, I'm a baby boomer, and baby boomers are very different than the previous generation. My dad grew up, and the only examples of fathers in his life were his own dad, his grandparents on both sides of his family, and perhaps some uncles, but that was about it. Whereas my generation came along, and we had the same, except we also enjoyed TV dads. Pick one out in your mind. I mean, we all had them growing up. And by the way, TV dads never did anything wrong. They did. They were perfect. I was looking online and came across the 10 most popular TV dads of all time. I want to see how well you know them. I'm going to show you their real names, their pictures, at least in most instances. Tell me who their TV dad name was. Here we go. What was this TV dad's name? Andy Taylor. Excellent. Of course, Andy Griffith. By far one of our favorite. By the way, what I loved about Andy is that he wasn't always the perfect dad. He had to oftentimes apologize to Opie. Robert Reed. Mike Brady from the Brady Bunch. Just out of curiosity, how many of you wanted to live in the house they lived in growing up? Boy, I wanted to live in that house. I thought that is the most beautiful house, split level. I mean, you got your own bedroom in the Brady Bunch house. I had to sleep in the room with my brothers. All right, here we go. Ray Romano from Everybody Loves Raymond. Tom Bosley. Oh, I heard it. Howard Cunningham from, of course, Happy Days. Michael Landon. All right. Now, I watched Michael Landon when he was a son. I never watched him when he was a dad. Charles Ingalls from, of course, Little House on the Prairie. Louis Castaneda. I can't pronounce his name. Wow. Stumped you on this one, didn't I? Who? Homer Simpson. From the series Homer Simpson, there he is. By the way, who was that that guessed that one? All right. Do you have any children? Poor children. Okay, all right. Bob Saget. Danny Tanner, of course, from Full House. Tim Allen. Tim Taylor from, of course, Home Improvement. And then finally, Ty Burrell. Ty Burrell from Phil Dunphy, Modern Family. A series I never watched, so I wasn't familiar with it. You know, dads play an incredibly important role in our lives. And one of the things that John does in his gospel is he's going to take this concept of father, and once again, and I've mentioned this several times, John layers so many themes, one right on top of another, as he communicates the message of Jesus in his gospel. And one of the themes that he introduces and weaves throughout the text is this concept of God as our father. Now, for us, we're so familiar with that it's no big deal. We read right over it and just keep reading. But I want to tell you, in the first century, the Word became flesh, made His dwelling among us. The Greek word there is tabernacle, literally. He tabernacled among us. We've seen His glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father. John's going to introduce a concept that, for at least his first century audience, was like, excuse me? We don't appreciate how big a deal it was for Jesus to call God Father. You see, in the Old Testament, Israel referred to God as God. Israel referred to God as Lord. Israel referred to God as King. Now, there were a few times that they referred to God as Father, but it was usually as the nation, and God was the father of the nation, or of the king, God is the father of the king. But in general, Israelites didn't refer to God or relate to God as their father. And yet Jesus came and used that phraseology because more than anything, he wanted to reveal to all of creation who and what God really was. You know, you read through Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and you'll see Jesus referring to God as Father. I love this story here in Luke chapter 2. You remember the story. Jesus is 12. He goes down to Jerusalem for Passover with his parents. He stays behind. They end up missing him. It takes 3 days to find him. And when they finally find him and ask him why he had done it, Jesus' response was, "Didn't you know I had to be in my Father's house?" Can I ask you a question? How do you think Joseph felt hearing that? I mean, what was going through Joseph's mind? I mean, I can almost hear Joseph right now. "Well, who do you think I am? Chopped liver? You know, I'm the one who married your mother. I'm the one who took you to Egypt to save your life. I'm the one who taught you how to make a living, or will teach you how to make a living. I mean, who am I?" But you see Jesus already relating to God as Father. Matthew chapter 6 in the Sermon on the Mount. This is then how you should pray. "Our Father in heaven." Again, we're so used to that that we don't appreciate the impact. And then Luke 23. Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Now, these are out of the Synoptic Gospels. But it's John who, as he introduces Jesus and how Jesus relates to God, John is the one that focuses more than the Synoptics on God as his Father. You see, in the Synoptics, we have 65 instances of where Jesus calls God Father. In John's Gospel, one Gospel compared to three, you have over 100 times that Jesus calls God Father. For instance, later on in John chapter 1, "No one's ever seen God but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in the closest relationship with the Father." You see, if you want to know about Blake, sit down with Blake's sons, because they probably know more about Blake than about anyone else except your wife and you, of course. The same would be true of me. If you want to know something about me, sit down with one of my two sons and just ask, "Who is Leslie Chapman?" And here is John saying, if you want to know who God is, then look at Jesus. We're going to see that brought out again later on in the text. John chapter 2, we'll be looking at here in about 2 or 3 weeks. "To those who sold doves, he said, 'Get these out of here. Stop turning my Father's house.'" Same thing he said when he was 12 years old. "Stop turning my Father's house into a market." But this is the one I want you to pause on, because this is the one that we can't relate to because we don't live in a first century setting. Jesus had been teaching in Jerusalem. He had been performing miracles. And his calling God Father had gotten him in trouble. Now notice here, he had healed on the Sabbath day. And Jesus knew that that would upset the Pharisees, especially the Pharisees, but also the Sadducees, the scribes. But he had healed on the Sabbath day. But notice what the text says. "For this reason, they tried all the more to kill him." Not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father. Now, I don't know if y'all noticed that today, but we've called God Father today. In prayer, we've referred to God as Father. I've not noticed anyone pulling their gun out and saying, "You call God Father again, I'm going to shoot you." And yet, that's the very picture you get here in John of Jesus calling God Father, and they're picking up rocks. Why? Because by calling God Father, you're calling yourself equal to Him. You see, in the first century, you did not call God Father, except in the sense of being the father of the Jewish nation. And it was that. And by the way, the very fact that the gospel writers tell us that not only did he call God Father, but he called God Abba Father. Abba Father. Today, later on, I'll get two phone calls. One of the phone calls will start this way. Hey, Dad. And I know instantly who that is. That's my oldest son, Rob. He calls me Dad. And he'll say, Happy Father's Day. And then I'll get a second phone call that'll say, Hey, Pops. And that'll be my second son, Kyle. Now you say, why do they call you two different things? I don't know. I'm serious. When Kyle was in the fifth grade at Good Pasture, all at once I went from being Dad to being Pops. But here's the thing. There's only two people that call me Dad or Pops. Now my grandkids will eventually call me Pops. Only problem is they're not talking yet. My oldest one, Grant, who's about 14, 15 months old, he calls me Ops. Okay? Ops! Okay, all right, I can get that. You know, he ain't got that P on the front part yet. Jesus called God Abba. And it was so important that the gospel writers left it in its original language. They didn't translate it. Jesus came to give us an image of who His Father is. In response to the Jews, He said, do not think I'll accuse you before. And I put the phrase my, or the word my in there, because that I think is implied in the text. There was an intimacy about Jesus and God that He says, I'm not going to be telling on you. Moses will, but I won't be telling on you. And then look at how John finishes his gospel. And we'll look a little bit more here in just a second. But he says, Lord, show us the Father. That's all we want to do. Show us the Father. Have you ever wanted to see God? Honestly, have you? How many of y'all have asked God to reveal Himself to you? Anybody? Am I the only idiot in here? Okay, thank you. I'm glad to know there's more idiots in here. No, I'm joking. I remember as a teenager, I wanted God to manifest Himself. And I remember asking God, would you just cough? I don't know why I picked coughing. And I don't know why I assumed God coughed, but would you just cough? I remember asking God, just flip the light on and then off again. I mean, just let me know you're there. And boy, if the power had gone out suddenly, I would have probably freaked out. I would have. I'm like, whoa. Moses said, God, just let me see you. I think there's something within us that longs for us to see God. In fact, Revelation 22 says, guess what? When we're finally in His presence, we will see His face. And so here's Philip, and he says, would you just show us the Father? And Jesus says, really, Philip? Have I been with you all of this time and you don't know who I am? You see, Jesus came more than anything else to show us who God was like. But it's not just Jesus. It's those of us who are dads in here have that role as well. I love what Austin Sorensen said. A child is not likely to find a father in God unless he finds something of God in his father. You see, we're not just guys providers. We're not just, you know, the leader of the family, the one who pays the bills. The greatest responsibility we have is the responsibility of giving our children a glimpse of who God is. It's the most important job we have. I want to invite Brian Shepherd to come up, if he would, because Brian did a marvelous job on Mother's Day, and Brian works with families. If you don't know, Brian is our counseling minister here at Hendersonville. He's available on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Just call up here at the office and they'll pass you through to him. I've got his number and how for years and years and years on my cell phone, and whenever I need to refer someone to counseling, this is the guy I send them to. And so, Brian, thank you so much for that role. I know, Brian, a lot of people who come to you, they will come to you, and as you're talking to them, you begin to see things from their past, from their childhood. What kind of impact does parents have on their children that manifests itself later as they grow up and become adults themselves?
It's incredibly powerful to see the impact that your family of origin has. You can see it wicking its way all the way through a person's life. Oftentimes when there are problems that someone's going through, you can trace some of those back at times to their family of origin. And also many of the great things that happen in families, we also trace back to the family of origin. There is an incredible power that comes from understanding our family and how we are processed through our early years to be ready to go out into the real world and to deal with all the things that we face with. You know, there's a big debate, and always has been, about are we more influenced by our genetics or are we more influenced by our surroundings? It's pretty much accepted that we are more influenced by the things that happen to us than the way we were born. And so therefore, it gives us a great opportunity to see how much the influence of our parents, aunts and uncles, friends, family, how those influences shape who we are. Extremely important to be able to do that. There are, and this is why I wanted to share some of these things. There's a wonderful book called The Blessing. And in The Blessing, it talks a lot about how we as fathers can help our children to be blessed. I need the clicker, by the way. I still need it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
We didn't do that in first service. Why did we do that? I want you to see a couple of things here. When we understand about a father's blessing, there are several things that I think we can really begin to understand. One of which is, it is extremely important, not only for mothers, which it probably comes more naturally for mothers, but for fathers to create meaningful touch with their children. To be able for children to feel loved and to feel nurtured and accepted, to experience something of touch. You know, in our skin, the nerve endings are very, very intense. And we can easily experience touch, even when somebody touches us and we're not aware that they were going to. We become aware of that. I've thought of that oftentimes when Jesus talked about walking through the crowd and said, "Who touched me?" You know, touch is important. It's powerful. We are nurtured by that. We feel secure. Children run to their parents oftentimes because they want that hug or they want that embrace. But that doesn't really stop as we grow. Touch is extremely important. And one of the ways that we need to recognize that our children can be blessed by us, no matter the home you grew up in, make sure that you exemplify elements of blessing them as you touch them.
Let me ask you a question before you move to the next one. I know in the Old Testament, the book of Genesis, you have this concept of blessing, which I think is probably where this book takes that concept from. You see the patriarch laying his hands on the one that's being blessed, whether it was Abraham to Isaac, Isaac to, of course, you had the mix-up, which was interesting there with Jacob and Esau. Later on, Jacob blessing Joseph's sons. Always that touch. Very, very important that we see something about us just touching our children, and especially that concept of putting our hands on their heads. I find that be remarkable in the way, at least in the Old Testament, the blessing was passed down.
It definitely is. And you see that in Genesis where out of that story specifically when Esau goes back to Isaac, and he goes back and he is there to want a blessing himself. And the power of the blessing was such that it was actually given to Jacob by trickery, but Esau goes back as an adult. He goes back as an adult, still trying to find that blessing from his father. You know, it's not that uncommon for people to talk about the struggles they have in their adult life because they never felt like they heard important words from their fathers, such as, I love you, I appreciate you, I believe in you, I care for you. It's just powerful how those things come across. And Esau was back there trying to get that blessing as well and cries when Isaac says, no, the blessing has already been given.
You know, another thing about that, Brian, is when Rebekah tells Jacob, go in and get the blessing, he says, but Dad's going to touch me.
Yes.
And Dad will know. And, of course, you have that ruse that takes place of where they put, you know, the lamb skin on his arms just so that when he touches him, because there was a definite difference between Jacob and Esau. Esau was very hairy and Jacob was not. But knowing my dad will touch me, and if he does and finds out I'm not Esau, you know, I'll be cursed instead of blessed. So that touch was so, so very important.
Interesting story. He didn't know the difference between his boy and a lamb. That's kind of odd, to be honest with you. The second part of the blessing is recognizing that when we can hear words from our parents, fathers in particular, words become so, so powerful. To hear our father's voice, and the parallel between God and our earthly father is that voice becomes a voice that resonates with us throughout our entire life. Women talk a lot about what's called the mother voice, the voice that you hear in the back of your head that both helps you and haunts you. We've heard it both ways. And the same way for men. What did Dad say? What did my father believe about that? And the shared belief system that we have because of the families that we've grown up in, it's phenomenal. And when it is done right, it really sets our children up for a great future. When it is accomplished in a poorer form, it just doesn't give our children as much as of what they need. And you hear this, looking for blessings in all the wrong places. That is a struggle that many experience. So when you hear the Father's voice and the Father's voice resonates with you, it gives you the power and builds the self-esteem such that we can approach the things in life.
Ryan, one of the things here, for some of us, like myself, I grew up in a family that didn't say, I love you. That was not a part of our vocabulary. And so, one of the things that I never experienced, my dad died at 69, but developed early onset Alzheimer's at 63, I never heard my dad say, I love you. And I longed, that was my biggest regret when he passed, was never having heard him say it, and then in reverse, me never having, I tried to say it one time, and I'm not sure he heard me. Why do you think in the Gospels, God says to Jesus, this is my son whom I love? Did Jesus need to hear that? And if so, what does that say for the rest of us?
Great example. And I think it illustrates the point really well. There is such a difference between knowing something and hearing something. It uses a different part of the brain to know something and then to hear something. The way it processes inside of us is different. And less is not that different than many people, many of us, that would love or would have loved to have heard our fathers say that they loved us. It's not enough just to know it. There is tremendous power in the ability to hear our fathers say those things that attach us, just the way I'm sure it reassured Jesus. And the way it connected Jesus to his father, to hear those words coming from his father. This is my son. Powerful, powerful words. Number three is understanding something about the way we value our children. Research has shown over the years that even more important than the rules that we have is our children understanding that we support them. Understanding that for the things that they are interested in, we assist them, we help them, we give them encouragement, we provide for them. One of the things that John talks about in his book here is, you can't tell a child, I think you're really gifted in the piano, and never provide your child with a piano to play. I remember when my son was growing up, he was really good at baseball, and I remember my father not really ever going to things that I did, and that always bothered me, and so I became just the opposite. I was going to be at everything, and so I made an effort to be there, and when he needed catcher's equipment, I went and bought him all new catcher's equipment. And the reason I did that was it was a little bit of making up and overdoing what didn't happen in my own life. And we do struggle with that. So it does affect us. And we do carry those scars and those wounds, or we carry the blessing. I'm hoping that you'll see how to bless your children and you'll use these to create special times. Make sure you're there for those celebrations. Celebrate all the important times in a child's life. Make a big deal out of them. All the important moments should be marked by a father's blessing, just like God did for his son Jesus. Hang on, I got to get through this. Picturing a special future is a really cool part of this, and that is, what do you want for your children? Do your children have any idea how you view them growing up? And that's not just about vocation. That's about what do you see them doing? Do you see them being, and I loved what Les talked about earlier, about the things that he sees for his children. He's going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. It's a powerful element of understanding that we see a great future. We see them being successful. Because when you're wondering as a kid what your future holds, for the most important people in your life to talk about what they see for you becomes a roadmap. It becomes a path. It's a way that they are guided through this life off of the blessing of you seeing and picturing a future for them. What an amazing blessing it is for your parents to talk about how they see you and how they see your life going.
Ryan, well, just one little point on that. When I was a little bitty boy, my grandfather developed a nickname for me. And so when I was 5, 6 years old, I would go to my grandfather's house and walk in the door, and he'd say, "There comes my little preacher." I hated that. I mean, I thought, I'm not going to be a preacher. Powerful words.
Be careful what you say.
That's right.
Be careful what you say. What's the old song? Be careful, little mouth, what you say. Absolutely. The last one I want you to see here is you have to find a way to commit to this. Find a way to show that you are fully supporting the blessing. And think of the various ways that you can bless your children, that you can touch them, that you can speak into their lives important messages that they will carry with them their entire life. Finding ways to value them and to show the special place that they hold. In ancient times, we all know the story about the son that had a robe and a ring and sandals. Well, that'd be kind of odd today, but there are ways we can make our children feel special and connected to us as their parents. And then also picturing that special future, finding that way to say, here's how I see you going, and then doing everything you can to assist them and help them in accomplishing the shared vision that your children and you have for their future. What a powerful blessing it is. Here's what I want to ask you dads to do. And I haven't seen it in this service, but it happened several times in the early service. If you've got a smartphone, take out your smartphone if you're a dad. Take a picture of what's on the board or on the screen up here. Because the power of what's up here can be that reminder for you that as you continue to raise your children all the way into their adult years, you are still providing for them a blessing. And that blessing continues your entire life. John Trent talks a lot about and details more of this information. And it's a wonderful book. It's called The Gift of the Blessing. And if you want to know more about that, you can pick that book up and it will help you to work through some of the elements of the blessing with more detail.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it so very much.
Thank you, buddy.
Brian is just a wonderful servant of this church, has been for many, many years, and provides so many insights for us. You know, as John finishes his gospel, a couple of other items that you see in it is this incredible security that John says the Father has, that when we're in the Father's hand, no one can snatch us out of His hand. And then I love the way the gospel ends. It's unique in John's gospel. But in John 20, when Mary Magdalene has seen the risen Lord, he then sends her to tell his apostles, of course, that he had been risen from the dead. I want you to notice how he describes what the message was supposed to be. Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. There it is again. Go instead to my brothers and tell them I'm ascending to my Father and to your Father, to my God and to your God. Jesus invites us into the family of God. That's why He came. June and I have always had three prayers for our two sons. Prayer number one was always that they would grow up and become a child of God themselves. And I had the wonderful privilege of baptizing both of them into Christ. Number two, we always prayed that they would marry godly spouses who had helped them in their work with God. God answered both that prayer and the first one. Number three, we prayed that God would allow them in whatever profession they chose to go into, to allow them to honor Him through that profession. It has now become the prayer of our grandchildren. As Brian said, we don't finish being dads when they move out of our houses. We're dads to the day we die. Let's be dads that reflect the image of God. But let me just say this, most important thing of all, you can't be a blessing to your children if you have not received God's blessing of salvation. It is that simple. I don't know where you are this morning. I don't know where you've been in relationship with your children in the past. But I can tell you that if it's not been a good place, it can all change today with a simple decision. And that's a decision to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, to become a part of the family of God, and to be able to truly say, Abba, Father, in your relationship with Him. If you've not obeyed the gospel, if you've not put your faith and been buried with Him in baptism, give your gifts, give your children the true gift, the gift of a godly father. Do that right now as together we stand and sing.